What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, I told y'all on Friday's show what to expect from the Tyson versus douchebag boxing match, if that's what you want to call it. But I told you what was going to happen. I told you that shit is rigged and that it was going to end up being, it was going to go the distance and they were going to give Jake Paul the win because that is what happens at all of his stupid boxing events. And that is exactly what happened. Now, I actually ended up not watching this stupidity. I remember I was telling you on Friday's show that I was waffling back and forth to whether or not I was going to watch it. And then what ended up happening is I found out the Lakers were actually playing on TV that night against the Spurs. So I decided to actually watch a real sporting event. And Lakers kicked ass, by the way. It was a great game. So I'm definitely glad I saw that. But I was not shocked when I woke up the next morning as it was exactly how I said it on Friday. I said, I will not be surprised if I wake up in the morning after this fight and I see that Jake Paul has gone the distance and won in a decision. And that is exactly what happened. Just what a joke. I mean, good for them for putting on a big stupid event. But I mean, to me, I actually would prefer to watch a real boxing event and watch real boxers box. Apparently the early cards were good. A lot of people's commentary on it was the two female fighters, that was those were the two winners of the night. And I mean, I guess you could put it that way, but in all honesty, how many of you can even recall their names? Guarantee you almost none of you remember either of their names, which means you're probably never going to watch them ever again. And also neither one of them won $20 million or $40 million that night for doing that. So they weren't really actually the winners of the night, because I guarantee none of you are ever going to watch another boxing event of theirs ever. So granted, they were probably the best fight of the night, but they were not the winners of the night, because like I said, go ahead, name for me the two women who fought in that event. And let me know what their upcoming schedules are, and let me know what happens in their next fights, because I know you guys are going to be just watching with bated breath, even though you'd rather watch a fucking phony, fake, rigged goddamn bullshit like that was. I mean, God, what a fucking disgrace to boxing. And that's just what I think of Jake Paul. I mean, I know there's some people who think, oh my God, he's brought attention to boxing. And yeah, he has. He's been putting on much better events than actual boxing does, but that's all they are. They're events. They're stupid, rigged, shitty events. But let's talk about a real fight, because UFC 309 happened on Saturday night, the following night, and John Bones Jones do what John Bones Jones do, and that was knockout. I called that too. I actually said knockout in round two. It actually ended up being knockout in round three, but John Jones in round three, boom, spinning back kick right to Stipe Miocic's kind of rib gut area, and that knocked dude out for the count. And not only did it knock him out in this match, but that sent Stipe Miocic into retirement. He retired right after his loss, and John Bones Jones continues to prove he is the GOAT of UFC fighting. And he didn't announce his retirement, so it's looking like we could potentially get another John Jones fight next year. So we'll see what happens there, but I mean, just yet another dominating fight from John Jones. It was just excellent to see. All right, and excellent to see was this weekend of football. I mean, all three of the games that I watched this weekend were fan-fucking-tastic. So let's go ahead and get started with the weekend of week 11, beginning with the Baltimore Ravens at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, this was the first game I watched in the day, and it was exactly how Baltimore versus Pittsburgh always is. First of all, the Steelers, it doesn't matter. This team, if they only score field goals, they still know how to fucking win. And that's what they did. Every point they got in this game were field goals. And the Ravens, man, like Lamar Jackson, he just was completely disjointed in this game. He was running for his life. He was not making the usual precise passes he will make. And it just was a really bad overall game from the Ravens offense, because even Derrick Henry, right on their first drive, fumbled the ball. And that was really the difference of the game, is that the Steelers were able to get three turnovers. The Steelers were able to take advantage and actually make their field goals, unlike Justin Tucker, who actually shockingly missed two field goals yesterday. So that was another factor in this game. And then just the Ravens had a few stupid penalties as well that set them back on a few drives. But overall, I mean, this Steelers defense is the real deal, y'all. They are 8-2, and eight of those wins are because of this defense. This defense is smash mouth, and it's crazy that a defense runs the team like this. And the Steelers got the win, 18-16. And, I mean, when you look at the stat line, neither offense really was doing anything. This was all typical defense domination, and it was a great game. These two teams put on a show, as they normally do, but the Pittsburgh Steelers move on to 8-2 on the season. Then we had the Green Bay Packers at the Chicago Bears. This actually ended up being a lot more close than anticipated. I mean, the Bears offense has been terrible this last month of football. I mean, they've been lucky to score 3 points, let alone a touchdown. But they did end up firing their offensive coordinator earlier in the week. And you could tell that their offense this week, Caleb Williams, felt a little bit more at ease. He looked a little bit more comfortable in this offense. They were able to drive it down the field. Their defense was actually able to take care of business against the Packers. Overall, the Packers' offense was tamped down just a bit. I mean, the score was a pretty low-scoring game. It ended up being a 20-19 win by the Green Bay Packers. But, I mean, the Bears, they literally only lost on a blocked field goal by the Packers at the end here. I mean, they got into field goal position, and the Packers were just able to take advantage. Apparently, they knew the Bears' kicker. He kicks low. He's got a low trajectory. So they kind of knew that if it came down to this, they were going to be able to block this, as they did. But Jordan Love, I would call a very solid and efficient day. Nothing that's going to blow you out of the water, but he went 13 for 17, 261 yards, one passing touchdown, and then also the game-winning rushing touchdown. Josh Jacobs had 76 yards and a touchdown, and then Watson, he had a huge game for them at the receiver position with 150 yards through the air, but it was really all about that big blocked field goal attempt by the Packers, and just another big win for the Packers, 20-19. Bears, like I said, even though it's a loss, they looked much better offensively than they have the last month. So they definitely needed that spark, but just another terrible way to lose for the Bears. Then we had the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Detroit Lions, and this was not even a game. The Detroit Lions absolutely smashed the Jaguars 52-6. As a matter of fact, this is the worst loss in the Jacksonville Jaguars franchise history, which says a lot, because the Jaguars, at times in their history, have been literally the worst team in the league, where they've got a couple seasons where they've only won one game or two games on the season. So they've had their really, really down moments. And this season has been very, very awful for them. But they're not, this team, this roster, this coaching staff is not as bad as some of these really historically terrible Jacksonville Jaguars teams. So to lose in historical fashion with this team, wow, that says a lot. They are headed into a bye week too, so don't be shocked if Doug Peterson actually ends up losing his job sometime between now and the next game, because that was a historic loss. And I mean, the Lions didn't even punt. Not one punt. They scored on every single possession in this game. Jared Goff, 24 for 29, 412 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Montgomery on the ground, 75 yards, 2 touchdowns. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 161 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like, this Detroit Lions team is just killing it. Unfortunately, they did suffer another huge injury on the defensive side of the ball. Linebacker Alex Anzalone, he broke his arm, and it looks like he's going to be out at least 6 to 8 weeks. So that's definitely through the rest of this regular season. maybe back for a playoff run. But as I continue to say with the Lions, they are so damn good. They have not, even in their loss this season, that loss was barely a loss. They could have easily won that game, and we would be looking at like an undefeated Detroit Lions team right now. But they have not had a game where they've got beat bad. They have not had a game where they've been outcoached. They have not had, they have won in so many different ways. When their offense is down, their defense picks them up. When their defense is down, the offense picks them up. Their special teams shows up when they need to. And it's just this team. You feel like every time they get tested, they always pass the test. And then they annihilate these teams who are the shitty teams in the league that you're supposed to beat. They not only beat them, but they beat them by margins like this. I mean, this is like the third game where the Lions have scored over 40 points this season and just completely obliterated their opponents. So this Lions team, man, whew, it's only halfway through the season. There's a lot of football left to go, but damn, they keep playing like this. This is the Super Bowl champion at the end of the year. Then we had the Minnesota Vikings at the Tennessee Titans. Shockingly, this was a lot closer than it ended up being. The Vikings got the win 23-13, but the Titans showed a little bit of spark. They actually had a huge touchdown. Will Levis was in the end zone throwing the ball, and they ended up getting like a 98-yard touchdown off of it on a third down nonetheless. So they have their sparks of offense, but the Vikings are obviously the better team. Sam Darnold, actually, he did not have any turnovers in this game. It actually was a really good game from him. Two touchdowns through the air, a touchdown on the ground. So he was able to put it together. And the Vikings, defensively as well, they were able to make some big plays as well. And the Vikings just put together another solid game and are 8-2 on the season, and in this crowded division of theirs as well. So they keep winning, and they got to keep winning. Them and the Packers got to keep pace with this Detroit Lions team, because they don't, they're going to fall back. Now, I look at it, and you look at the NFC side of the playoff picture, and I feel like it's pretty much going to be pretty simple for both the Vikings and the Packers to make the postseason as wild card teams, even if they don't win their division, simply because the NFC is not really good, we'll put it that way, especially compared to the AFC. Then we had the Las Vegas Raiders at the Miami Dolphins, and the Dolphins put together another high-powered offensive game here. Tua went 28-36, 288 yards and 3 touchdowns on the day. Achan on the ground had 73 yards and a touchdown. But also on the opposite side of things here, the Raiders actually had an offensive standout for once, and tight end Brock Bowers, he had 126 yards and a touchdown. But overall, this was just straight-up domination for the most part by the Miami Dolphins. They got the win 34-19. Then we had the Los Angeles Rams at the New England Patriots. The Rams pretty much dominated this game. I mean, it ended up being a 28-22 win, so it pretty much was close. But, I mean, the Rams had the lead the whole way. Nacua had a huge game, 123 yards and a touchdown. Kupp also had, I believe, two touchdowns. I know he had one for sure, but I think he had two touchdowns. Stafford, man, 18-27, 295 yards and 4 touchdowns. Matthew Stafford, it is crazy to watch. I mean, we marvel at all these old dudes and how well they play. And it just kind of feels like a lot of us are forgetting about Matthew Stafford, which is kind of on par for his career, because, you know, he was drafted by the Lions, and he was great when he was with the Lions. He was lighting it up. It's just they weren't getting the wins, and then he gets traded to the Rams. He wins a Super Bowl here with the Rams, but still, I don't think we talk about Matthew Stafford as one of the elite quarterbacks in the league, but dude is. I mean, his arm is still a fucking cannon. I mean, he has not lost a step when it comes to accuracy, the power he has with his arm, and just his will to win. It's something else. And, you know, the Rams are also in a really close, shitty division. But I look at this team, and if they just are able to keep getting wins like this, they should win their division. It's simply because Matthew Stafford is playing at a high level still. And, you know, you got Nacua and Kupp healthy. You got Williams in the backfield who's had a solid couple of seasons. I really like what I see from them offensively, and I just really would not be shocked if they just go on a little bit of a run here and actually end up winning their division solely because Matthew Stafford is just playing at a whole other level, still playing at a high level, still looking really solid, and still playing with some grit is definitely what he's doing here. Then we had the Cleveland Browns at the New Orleans Saints, and wow, Taysom fucking Hill is back. I mean, he's always been what you would call a Swiss Army knife. He is such a weird player for the Saints, but he's effective with what he does. You know, he started out as a quarterback, but then, you know, Sean Payton started using him as more of like a Tim Tebow-esque type quarterback where he would just come in and sometimes he would pass the ball, sometimes he would catch the ball, sometimes he would run the ball. And that's kind of what he's progressed into. Then he kind of switched over to the tight end role, which is technically what his position is now. But, I mean, the guy can do just about everything. And yesterday, that is exactly what he did. He had 138 yards rushing, and he plays the tight end position. So, and he's played quarterback too. I mean, that's why I call him the Swiss Army knife, because you can't really pinpoint what position Taysom Hill is, but 138 yards on the ground with three touchdowns. The guy went off, and he was a huge factor in yesterday's win for the Saints, 35-14 over the Browns, who just keep on reeling. Honestly, at this rate, it is really looking like the Browns are going to be the number one overall pick. Gotta wonder which route they're going to go. If the Browns really are the number one overall pick, you wonder, are they going to go Shedeur Sanders? I kind of feel like if that's the case, we're going to have us one of those John Elway, Eli Manning type deals where Shedeur is going to be like, I ain't going to Cleveland. I'll stay in Colorado. That's kind of the vibe I would get from that. Whereas now if it's the New York Giants who end up with the number one overall pick, I don't think he's going to have an issue going to New York. I could be wrong on that, but I'm just saying. So I'm looking at the Browns and I'm like, man, what is this team? They're terrible. What are they going to do? Because they're just terrible, but you really got to, because are they going to stick with Deshaun Watson? And then you got Winston here, who Jameis Winston's actually been doing pretty well as a starter for the Browns. 30 for 46 yesterday, 395 yards, two touchdowns. So he did have a solid day. Judy had probably his best game as a Brown, 142 yards and a touchdown. So they have sparks. So you got to kind of wonder what they're going to do. Are they going to roll with Winston? Are they going to try and draft Shedeur? Are they going to go after Travis Hunter? But I kind of feel like it would be maybe the same situation as Shedeur, where Travis Hunter is going to be like, I ain't going to Cleveland. It's going to be a real interesting situation to see if Cleveland ends up with the number one pick, because at this rate, they are probably going to be the number one overall pick. If I'm looking at all the worst teams in the league right now, my money would be on the Browns or the Giants as the number one overall pick. That's just kind of the way I see it. So we'll see what happens there, but it's going to be very interesting come draft time to see what happens if the Browns actually end up being the number one overall pick. Because I don't think Shedeur or Travis Hunter are going to go there. I think both of them will pull a, I'm just going to kick it in college. Because the thing about college now, that's even more of a threat. I mean, Elway and Eli were successful with it, and they went on to have successful careers as well. But now that you make money as a college football player, I mean, Travis Hunter and Shedeur are just fine if they stay in college, because they'll still be making money and they could just wait till the next year, go number one overall. Those two are going to be good. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens if the Browns end up with that number one overall pick, which it's looking like it's going to happen. Then we had the Indianapolis Colts at the New York Jets, and this actually turned out to be a very good game. It was back and forth. It was boom Colts, then boom Jets. And then it ended up being boom Colts all the way in the end. The Colts got the win 28-27. Anthony Richardson had an excellent game back. You know, he got benched for tapping out a couple weeks ago. Well, this time he did not tap out. He went 20 for 30, 272 yards, a passing touchdown, but also the game-winning rushing touchdown. And big win for the Colts. Another big loss for the Jets, whose season just keeps going further down the toilet. And, overall, it was a decent game from the Jets. But, they did not want to lose like that, and they lost like that. And their season just keeps getting worse. Then we had the Atlanta Falcons at the Denver Broncos and motherfucking Bo Nix. Oh, my Lord. This guy started the season off like, what is going on? And he went off yesterday. He's had a couple of games where you're like, damn, this guy's something else. Well, yesterday he had that game. 28 for 33, 307 yards and 4 touchdowns in a 38-6 win over the Falcons. Now, the Falcons lead their division. They're looking like one of those teams where they're very up and down and shaky to me. And honestly, I would not be shocked if they lost their grip on the division and the Buccaneers ended up winning the division. I just don't think the Falcons are that good. And this game showed it. I mean, first of all, the Broncos defense just straight up dominated this team. And really, when you look at this Broncos team, that is their bread and butter. Their defense is excellent. It's the offense that's had the issues. But Bo Nix, man, he was on. And when he is on, this offense is damn freaking good. So they just blew the Falcons out of the water. And the Falcons now just, they do not look good. And the Broncos, they're not the worst team in the league, of course. But you kind of look at it, and with the way these two teams are, the way their rosters are, and really in their divisions, I mean, you expected the Broncos to go through growing pains. You know, this is only Sean Payton's second year as coach. This is Bo Nix's rookie season. They don't have a lot of offensive firepower. Their defense is excellent. And then, of course, they're in a division with the Kansas City Chiefs, so they're not really expected to do anything except what they're doing. They're getting some pretty decent wins. But the Falcons, on the other hand, are in one of the worst divisions in football, number one. They should be, like, dominating this division, and they are not. Like I said, don't be surprised that the Buccaneers come out of nowhere and just yank this division from their hands, because that's what it's looking like so far to me is going to happen. Then we had the Seattle Seahawks at the San Francisco 49ers, and this was another good-ass game. It was a typical Niners-Seahawks game. I mean, the Niners have dominated the Seahawks, I believe, the last 6 games in a row the Niners have won. But this used to be a crazy, I mean, even though the Niners have won the last 6, this is a great rivalry. These two teams always play each other hard. There are so many times where it comes to a last game-winning drive that just puts them over the edge, and that is exactly what happened in this one yesterday. Now, it looked like the Niners were going to win this one. It looked like, you know, you didn't really expect Geno Smith to make these really big plays on the game-winning drive, but the dude did. I mean, he had 2 runs. One run, which set them up in field goal position, but they needed the touchdown. So they get in they get in the red zone, and Geno Smith just takes his shot, and he's able to run in for the game-winning touchdown in the final seconds, and he went 25 for 32. 221 yards, and that game-winning touchdown on the day. But the Niners, I mean, they just don't look good. I keep saying it, and it's so funny to me because I'm watching all these other shows, and everybody else is like, oh, I still think the Niners is good. And yeah, they're in a terrible division, so I wouldn't be shocked if they still made the playoffs, but I actually think the Cardinals and the Rams are more reliable and more likely to win this division than the Niners are. The Niners just do not look good. They, in the second half of games, they are terrible this year. They are able to get going the first quarter and the second quarter. They come out of halftime and they just shit the bed. I think every game this year, they have shit the bed in the second half, even in their wins. This team has not looked good. They don't have, like, that, you know, they used to beat the shit out of you at the line. Their offense used to just annihilate you. Their defense used to. And yesterday, they didn't even crack 100 yards on the ground. And that's the first time that's happened in quite some time. I believe Seattle defense held the San Francisco offense to below 200 yards as well. As a whole, the whole entire offense. So this was a very solid game from the Seahawks, who won 20-17. And like I said, Niners do not look good to me. They could still make the playoffs, but to me, it's a big whoop-de-doo. They're going to be a one-and-done out-of-here team. They are not a legit championship team, and I give zero fucks what anybody wants to say about that. They are not, I repeat, not a legit championship team. They, like I said, could win this division. They ain't going to a Super Bowl or even having a chance of winning a Super Bowl. This is a terrible 49ers team. And I know everybody wants to blame the injuries, but that just ain't it. This team does not have that same spark that they have had the last, what, 4 or 5 years? So, yeah, I don't see that from the Niners anymore, at least this season. Then we had another excellent game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills. The Bills were actually able to do what no team has done so far this season to the Kansas City Chiefs, and that is not shit the bed, not give the Chiefs the game, and actually finish and get the job done. And it was back and forth. And it started off with the Bills getting an interception from Patrick Mahomes on his first pass from scrimmage. Boom, interception. Bills go out and score a touchdown right after that, but their kicker missed the extra point. I see that and I go, don't even tell me this game is going to come down to that 1 point. Thankfully, it did not. Like I said, back and forth. Mahomes had another solid game other than the turnovers or the turnover that he had. But, I mean, it was just all him other than that. I mean, the rest of the offense, they are so, Xavier Worthy, I've been singing his praises all season long because I of course, like him because he's a Texas Longhorn. But I know what he's capable of. But he is still a rookie, and he made some rookie mistakes yesterday. There was one pass. He was wide ass open. He catches the ball, but unfortunately, he wasn't paying attention to his feet, and one of his feet was out of bounds, and it blew up a good drive for the Chiefs. But the Bills, they took this one from the Chiefs. Defensively, they made sure Mahomes wasn't really able to make any big plays. They made sure to kind of keep him in the pocket. They made sure to actually sack him. They made sure once they got their hands on him, he went down. They locked down Travis Kelce, who only had like 2 yards yesterday. They put it together, and then the Bills' offense, they put together a good game plan as well. I mean, this was probably the worst game for the Chiefs' defense on the season. But, I mean, Josh Allen, he didn't have to be the Superman yesterday. He, of course, made basically the game-winning play on the last drive for the Bills. Basically, the Bills were driving. They had a 2-point lead, but it was one of those things where it's like, you got to score the 7. They did end up getting into field goal range. It was a 4th and 2, and to me, it didn't matter whether they were up at whether they were up 5 points or 2 points. You got to score that touchdown. Or just say, fuck it. So 4th and 2, Josh Allen takes the ball. Not only does he get the first down, he scores the touchdown to put the Bills up 30-21. And at this point, there's only like 2 minutes and 20-something seconds left for the Chiefs, and they have to score twice. So, yes, they are capable of scoring real quick, but it did not look like that was going their way today, and it was not going their way today. The Bills' defense held them down. They were actually able to force an interception on that last drive. It was a 4th down. Mahomes looked for Kelce, and I mean, he wasn't even anywhere near open. It was a completely underthrown ball as well, but the Bills were able to get the interception. They were able to get the win, and they really did have a very good game, and it was really nice, like I said, to see a team finally not shit the bed and not just hand this one to the Chiefs and actually finish the game. I know now the Chiefs are now not, they're no longer undefeated. The Bills, though, they actually do look like a legit championship-level team. So we'll see if they're able to keep that up throughout the rest of the season. But big win for the Bills. Obviously, it's only one loss for the Chiefs. We can't count them out of anything at all. I expect them to keep on winning, as a matter of fact. I mean, this is just one loss for the Chiefs. Obviously, they're still the defending champs, so you still cannot overlook them, but big win for the Bills yesterday. And it wasn't just, oh my God, we barely won. It was basically the Bills dominated this one from start to finish, they were able to finish the job. And let's see if they face off against each other in the playoffs, if the Bills are able to continue to carry that same energy against this Kansas City Chiefs team. And then Sunday Night Football ended up being an excellent game between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, the first half was completely dominated by the Chargers. It looked like this was going to be an absolute blowout by the Chargers. And Joe Burrow all of a sudden wakes up and was like, nah, we're going to win this game. So the Bengals, they started making a run in the second half. They tie the game up. And I'm thinking, oh, shit. The Chargers are going to do what the Chargers are going to do. And that is lose this game. They did not. As a matter of fact, you know, you got to give it up to this Chargers defense. I think they are one of the most underrated defenses in the league by far. They were able to, you know, they obviously weren't able to contain Burrow. I mean, he had 356 yards and three touchdowns through the air. So Burrow had a good game. But there were some points in this game where you were like, damn, this Chargers defense is really taking it to Burrow. And there were a couple plays where he was on his ass and feeling it. And you could tell. Their ground attack would get going, but then it would fall back. And so the Chargers defense just kind of kept in there. Then on the last drive for the Bengals, they get in field goal position and they missed the field goal. So the Chargers have 20-ish, 30-ish seconds to try and break this tie. And Justin Herbert connects on two amazing passes to get the Chargers in close field goal range. So what you could tell was going to happen here is they hand off the ball to J.K. Dobbins, and it's looking like they're just going to hand off the ball to him. He's going to set them up in a little bit closer field goal range. They're going to call their last timeout, and they're just going to kick this game winner and hopefully go right off into the sunset. J.K. Dobbins was like, no, I'm not leaving this up to my field goal kicker. I'm actually just going to run in and score the touchdown, and that is exactly what he did. J.K. Dobbins scored the game-winning touchdown for the Los Angeles Chargers, for them to get a big win, 34-27. And Joe Burrow has had three games this season where he's passed for over 300 yards, had three touchdowns, and zero interceptions, and the Cincinnati Bengals have lost those games. That is, it's crazy because Burrow is having literally an MVP-type season. He is statistically having his best season of his entire career at this point, and his team is 4-7. And can't even win. They can't close out a game. That's the Bengals' issue this year, is they just can't close out a game. So another one bites the dust for the Bengals. But the Chargers, they were able to hang on and get the win. We'll see what the Chargers are able to do. I don't know if they're a championship-level team, but I kind of look at them and go, they might fuck somebody's season up, but we'll see what happens there. Moving on to Monday Night Football. And tonight we have the Houston Texans at the Dallas Cowboys. Right now the Texans are a 7-point favorite. I mean, you know me. I'm always picking my Cowboys. So how are the Cowboys going to magically win this one tonight? Well, my prediction is that since it's Monday Night Football and Troy Aikman's going to be in the booth, Troy Aikman's going to he's just going to say, fuck it, I'm so sick and tired of seeing the Cowboys suck ass. I'm going to walk down there and play quarterback tonight. He's going to hit up Emmett Smith. He's going to hit up Michael Irvin, Charles Haley, Deion Sanders. They're going to get Alvin Harper, Jay Novacek. They're going to get the whole gang back together. And the power of the 90s Cowboys will compel the power of the 2024 Cowboys. And the Cowboys will get the win 23-20 over the Houston Texans. And that's how I hope that's going to end up. Probably what's more than likely going to happen is the Texans are probably going to win like 42-6. But, you know, I will say the Texans to me are a team that needs to be on alert right now. They just aren't as good as they were at the beginning of the season. Offensive line is very, very shaky. I do think the Cowboys defense could give Stroud some problems. But, I mean, overall, this Cowboys team is horrific. So, I'm not expecting miracles tonight. But, like I said, I never pick against my Cowboys. So, I'm going with them in a close one, 23-20. And the homie Simon Ruvalcaba, he is going with the Houston Texans in this one, 27-20. Moving on to the NBA and the top 10 NBA power rankings for this week. we have a little bit of movement. We actually have one new team, actually a couple new teams we're going to talk about towards the bottom here. Very Western Conference heavy as well. I mean, when you look at the difference between the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference right now, it's like two teams in the East are playing really well, and then everybody else sucks ass. And then you turn to the West, and it's like there are some damn good teams over there. So it's going to be very Western Conference heavy after the first couple of teams we talk about here. So let's go ahead and discuss number one. Still remains Cleveland because they are 15-0 on the season. As a matter of fact, they didn't even play Donovan Mitchell last night, and they still won. This team is kicking ass. They beat the Chicago Bulls twice this week. They beat the Philadelphia 76ers and the Charlotte Hornets. So they are really just on a tear, and they are annihilating everybody in so many different ways. Right now, they are first in the league in field goal percentage, knocking down 52% of their shots. They're first in the league on three-point percentage. They are knocking down 42% of their three-pointers. And right now they lead the league in points per game, averaging 124 points per game. They are not only 15-0, but they are rolling through everybody right now. Like I keep saying with them, who knows how long it's going to last? Who knows if this is going to be, if they're going to actually be a good team this year, but this is a good lead that they're building regardless. And like I just said about the Eastern Conference, I mean, who knows how it's going to turn out? It is only November. We are only a month into the season. So we're just getting going. But the Eastern Conference is terrible. So the Cavaliers are just building a nice little solid lead here. And looking like a pretty damn good team while doing it. Then at number two on my top 10 NBA power rankings is the Boston Celtics. Overall record of 11-3. This past week, they lost to the Atlanta Hawks, but got wins over the Brooklyn Nets and the Toronto Raptors. And of course, this team, it's just all about Jason Tatum, averaging 30 points per game, 8 rebounds per game, 6 assists per game. He's just doing it all. And really just making sure this team is staying intact until they get Porzingis back. It's looking like Porzingis is going to be back next month. So once Porzingis is back, things could change for the Celtics team in a good way. Because if you don't remember, last year when they got Porzingis back, that's when they really just looked really fucking good. So this team with Porzingis is really good. But without Porzingis, they actually look pretty good. So we'll see what happens in the next month. But Boston is still looking like the Boston Celtics. Then at number three on my top 10 NBA power rankings, a team that has taken a huge leap, a team that I cannot believe is 10-2 on the season, and that is the Golden State Warriors. I did not think this team had a chance this year, and they are killing it. They beat Dallas and the Memphis Grizzlies this week, but Steph fucking Curry. I mean, we talk about LeBron and his age, and how it's crazy that he's still playing at the level that he's playing at. Steph Curry, we got to start talking about that now, too. I mean, he's not as old as LeBron, but he's getting up there. He's been in the league for many years, and Steph is still playing at an insane level. He is carrying this Golden State Warriors team, and they don't have a lot of talent, but he is like, fuck it, I don't give a shit. We're still winning. One thing that is definitely helping him, though, is this bench of theirs. They have a deep bench, and when the bench comes in, these bench players know their role, and they are doing what they need to do to get these wins, and the Golden State Warriors, at least for now, looking like one of the top teams in the league, and I mean, you really can't overlook them, not only just because of the Steph factor, but I mean, this is a championship-level team. They have won championships on numerous occasions. They are a dynastic team. So even though they're not the same team that they used to be when they were winning championships, don't overlook this Golden State Warriors team because right now they are playing championship-level basketball. Then at number four in my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Oklahoma City Thunder. Overall record of 11-3. This past week, they beat the Los Angeles Clippers, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Phoenix Suns, and lost to the Dallas Mavericks. Really have not lost a step with the loss of Chet Holmgren so far. SGA is averaging 29 points per game, 5 rebounds per game, 6 assists per game. So he's really just taken over the leadership role on this team and just keeps on rolling. You know, last year he had an MVP-type season. He didn't win the MVP, but he was right up there. And here he is back at it and just elevating this team to another level. And they look like a really, really good team, even without Chet Holmgren right now. Then to number five on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the Los Angeles Lakers. Overall record of 9-4. This past week, they beat the Memphis Grizzlies, the San Antonio Spurs, and the New Orleans Pelicans. Anthony Davis and LeBron James are having a fantastic year. LeBron right now has had four games in a row with triple-doubles. Four. He has never done that in his career. And LeBron James has been around for 955 years at this point. And he's accomplishing things that even he still has not accomplished. Like, that is crazy. But AD, he is averaging 32 points per game. He leads the league in that. He is having an MVP year and also a defensive player of the year type year so far. You could tell he is pissed off losing that defensive player of the year award last year. Not only is he going for that this year, but he, like I said, MVP level. I know we are very early in the season and things could change, but AD is on a mission this year. And then you look at it, they got some young cats who are just hitting three-pointers, who are really stepping up. This guy Connect, he is connecting. I mean, he's knocking down shots that you're like, whoa, what? Where'd you come from, dude? So I really like what I'm seeing from the Lakers so far. Three-game winning streak right now. And like I said, four games in a row with a triple-double for LeBron. Both AD and LeBron playing at excellent levels. And if they keep up, both of them are able to stay healthy and keep it up like that, and who knows, there's still talks that the Lakers are going to make a trade at some point in this season. If they make a trade for some decent player, I don't even think they really need to make a trade if AD and LeBron keep playing like this, but I think that's more about the depth is what the trade would be about. But Lakers playing excellent basketball right now. Then at number six on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the Denver Nuggets, overall record of 7-5. This past week, they lost to the New Orleans Pelicans and the Memphis Grizzlies. So not a good week for them, but they're still the Nuggets. I mean, Jokic averaging a triple-double on the season, averaging 30 points per game, 14 rebounds per game, 12 assists per game, and just leading this team in every possible category you absolutely can. They have been battling through their injuries, which is really their main issue, but still Denver Nuggets, to me, one of the best teams in the league. They've got a lot of depth, in their roster. And I know they're 7-5, but just, you really got to watch out for this team, especially with Jokic. He hasn't even got started, but his numbers are just boom in your face as always. Then at number seven on my top 10 NBA power rankings at the Phoenix Suns, overall record of 9-5. This past week, they got a win over the Utah Jazz, but are now on a three-game losing streak. They lost to the Sacramento Kings, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Injuries are really just an issue right now for the Phoenix Suns, especially Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant, he started off the season just at an insane level, and now that he's out, that's really taken a huge hit to their offense. And so that's really what's made them fall back a bit here, but he should be coming back, I believe, next week, hopefully. So I feel like once they get him back, the Phoenix Suns will be right back in line at what they were doing a couple weeks ago. Then at number eight on my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Minnesota Timberwolves. Overall record of 8-6. This past week, they lost to the Portland Trail Blazers twice, but they did beat the Sacramento Kings and the Phoenix Suns. Julius Randle, I was wondering how he was going to fit in with this team, and he is fitting right in. He actually just had a game winner the other night over the Sacramento Kings, so that was big for him. But, I mean, on the defensive side of the ball, this is what I feel like the Timberwolves were missing. Especially last year, you know, they made a really nice run last year, but defensively they kind of fell back, and Julius Randle is actually giving them that defensive edge. So it's going to be interesting, like I said, to see how things go as the season progresses on, but Randle is fitting right in. And, if he stays healthy, he's making this Timberwolves team a very good team, especially on the defensive side of things. Then at number nine on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I could not believe when I looked at the standings and this team was here, because to be honest, I really have not paid much attention to this team, and that is the Houston Rockets. They are 10-4 on the season. They actually lead their division. This past week, they got wins over the Washington Wizards. They beat the Clippers twice, and they beat the Chicago Bulls as well. They've got Jalen Green and Fred VanVleet. These are their leaders of the squad. I really don't know what's going on with this team. I just kind of feel like it's one of those early regular season sparks, but it was just something. I looked at them 10-4. You couldn't overlook it. You couldn't look past it. And I felt like I had to talk about them a bit because I'm like, whoa, the Houston Rockets? Really? They're 10-4? Okay, good for them. I mean, I expected them to be one of the worst teams in the league, and here they are in my top 10. I did not expect them to be anywhere near the top 10, let alone at number 9. But we'll see how they go as the season progresses. I mean, they're a young squad. I would call them a young nobody squad, but I mean, you never know what's going to happen. They could potentially make a trade at some point for somebody and just really improve this team and all of a sudden become a force. But I don't know if we're going to be talking about Houston. I kind of feel like Houston's going to end up being one of those streaky teams. But like I said, they're at 10-4. I felt like I had to talk about them. And then rounding out the top 10 NBA power rankings this week, we have the Sacramento Kings. Overall record of 8-6. This past week, they lost to the San Antonio Spurs and the Minnesota Timberwolves, but they did get wins over the Phoenix Suns and the Utah Jazz. De'Aaron Fox had himself a historic weekend. He scored 109 points in a two-game span, which is a franchise record for the Sacramento Kings. He dropped 60 points on the Minnesota Timberwolves. And then in the following game, he dropped 49 points over the Utah Jazz. The 60 points, unfortunately, was in a loss. The 49 was in a win. The Kings, to me, they are, I've felt like they're going to be a very weird, streaky team, and that's kind of how they've been so far. But De'Aaron Fox, if he keeps playing like this, they're going to find their identity and they're going to get it going. I mean, Sabonis, the guy is a double-double king, like how Jokic is a triple-double king. Well, Sabonis is basically the same way with double-doubles. So I kind of feel like if Fox and Sabonis are able to really just get it going, this could be a really solid team. But I mean, I felt like it was, I could not overlook what Fox has done in these last couple of games because only a couple players have done this in the history of the league, and one of them being Kobe Bryant and the other one being Wilt Chamberlain. So when you're up there with those two names and it comes to scoring, it's got to be, I gotta shout you out somehow because that's just undeniable right there. We'll see what he's got for the rest of the week. And that's basically what Fox is going to have to do to keep the Sacramento Kings team competitive. Because you notice, like I said, this top 10 was full of Western Conference teams. And 3 through 10 were all Western Conference teams except for the top two. So Sacramento's really got to keep it going. And they're in a tough division, too. They're right there with the Golden State, the Lakers, Phoenix. So they're in a stacked-ass division. And then I didn't even mention the Clippers either. So who are also playing pretty decent basketball right now. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here in the Western Conference, but also the East, because things will start to develop more as the season goes on. But right now, very Western Conference heavy, and the Sacramento Kings are definitely going to need that that type of energy from De'Aaron Fox on a regular basis this season to just keep up with everybody else. All right, y'all. Enjoy the rest of the week of sports, and I will talk to you on Wednesday.